Bir anlık soru bana öyle bir sırasında.
This morning meal of 10 benefits nourishes us in our practice. Its rewards are boundless, filling us with ease and joy. I like breakfast. I find breakfast really pleasant. I've been reading old and contemporary commentaries on Oriyoki practice, and the instructions are quite practical and detailed and sober, but there's just this little hint of pleasure that creeps in a lot around breakfast. Just this subtle, yeah, seems to be a meal deeply appreciated by people. So I always eat a healthy breakfast, not too big, but it's all kinds of things. Most of us in the room never hear the entire meal verse because we use it only for formal Oriyoki. You may know only the five thoughts, which Tsuho elucidated in a Wednesday class recently. But there's a lot more to the formal meal verses. And it's a very standard translation that we use. If you want to follow along for bits and pieces today, it's on page 47 in the chant books. One thing the Buddha said in his basic teaching was to remember that everything eats. He said it pretty much that plainly. Everything needs nutriment. It's one of the fundamental truths of being alive. The gateway of suffering and the gateway of liberation. So, on a basic level, we need to understand how the endless drive for nourishment forces us into behaviors, drives all living beings. If we can understand how deep and universal that drive is, we can understand a lot about how the world is, how the world works. And if we can see eating, satisfying that drive as a deep well for Dharma, we can also be freed from hunger, all kinds of hunger. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about both of those aspects. And breakfast, of course, we all learn as children, means to break the fast. And every once in a while when I'm eating breakfast, I remember it may be the only meal many people will eat. And that everybody, lots of people, are always breaking their fast. They don't know in the morning if they will get breakfast. They don't know if they will eat at all. Many people in the world are fasting much of the time. So when I break my fast, I try to remember others also need to break theirs. The Buddha said that we should always receive food with the right intention or with reverence. And I think every one of us can notice how many times we don't do that, how many times we're not stopping to find that right intention when the food is in front of us. But because of that, there have been many versions of how to receive a meal or how to formally honor the meal developed in Buddhism in every country. There are a lot of different systems. We follow one very traditional set of rules for Oriyoki. It's very widely used. And it goes way back into ancient Chinese monastery rules. Dogen encountered them when he went to China and he brought them back to Japan and he codified a form that is still used widely today. Unfortunately, here you will see variations. Some differences in style have crept in over the years. We aren't as consistent as I wish we could be. We're close, but there are little individual differences. But the verses we use are very widely used in many places, identical. Just a little bit more about Oriyoki, and then I'll move on. So Oriyoki, Oriyoki. O is answer or reply but also to accept, to obey, and to satisfy. And Rio is the quantity or the amount or the measure. And ki is the bowl or the vessel, the receptacle. So ori oki literally means the right amount for the bowl. Sometimes it's translated as the right response to the serving. So it's both getting the right amount in the bowl and approaching it with the right attitude. If you've gone to retreats, especially for me, a winter retreat, pre-dawn, zazen, a little bit of work, hours go by before breakfast. I see face. I see lots of nodding heads. Long pre-dawn zazen. And then a long setup. You take your place, you open your bowls, you wait for the serving, and so on. That bowl of oatmeal is so welcome and appreciated. I mean, you just automatically have reverence for the oatmeal because it's just the right amount at that time. And it's very satisfying. And I think in part, it can satisfy us because we know it's good for us. We know this is a simple meal and we're sharing it in this attentive silence. And so we're able to really appreciate and enjoy each bite. There's no distraction. Our mind is completely focused on that very desirable bowl of oatmeal. And for me also that cup of tea. Anyway, so there's a lot in just that little bit of the verse that is about breakfast. And that's what I'm going to focus on today. I want to break it down a little bit. But this is how I first learned it in G.U. Kennett's translation. It's a little bit different. The 10 benefits bless the breakfast gruel, and all trainees profit greatly thereby. Since the results thereof are limitless and wonderful, pleasure is ours for eternity. That's a big promise. You know, that's pretty great. Pleasure is ours for eternity. So the morning meal is traditionally rice gruel or congee, a kind of porridge made out of rice. It's delicious if it's made right. And in practice settings, it's often served with gomashio, which is a sesame salt, or with seaweed. It's just delicious. Here we eat oatmeal, fruit, and tea. If you've looked at Kyogen's book, you know there's a chapter called Cold Oatmeal. And he's writing about the experience he had when he became a senior at the monastery, where there were about 50 monks in residence at the time. And seniors are served first. So by the time it was time to eat, his oatmeal was completely cold. It's not always great to be a senior. But he's really talking in there about acceptance of conditions and practicing within the circumstances in which you find yourself. But he also was complaining about cold oatmeal. So the 10 benefits, what are these benefits? Have you ever wondered what the 10 benefits are? This is an old list. It comes from the Mahasanghika Vinaya, which is an early Indian school from before the Mahayana, many, many centuries ago. And somehow through the mists of time, this list of 10 benefits has come to us. It has roots in Chinese medicine and other things. Healthy complexion, strength, a long life, comfort, wholesome speech, good digestion, preventing colds, relieving hunger, relieving thirst, and keeping your bowels regular. Or in Dogen's words, suitable excretion. So that little bowl of oatmeal is going to do all of that for us, right? So after that, after this verse, later in the meal verse, the chant leader sings this. The three virtues and six tastes of this meal are offered to Buddha and Sangha. May all sentient beings in the universe be equally nourished. There's a lot in there too. Notice that first we say thank you for the bowl that will benefit ourselves. And then we offer benefits to everyone else. And it makes me look at my oatmeal a little bit differently again and really hear this wish that everyone be equally nourished. Pulls me out of my self-centeredness again, just a little bit. May all be equally nourished. The three virtues, also very old, that the food is soft. In other words, easy to chew if you don't have dentists around very much. Clean, and that it's been prepared in accord with the Dharma. In other words, prepared with reverence, prepared in a sustainable and generous way. And the six tastes, we all know these: sweet, spicy, salty, bitter, sour, and mild, or simple, sometimes it's called. Spicy and mild in the same list, but also sweet and salty, bitter and sour. These are also very old ways to talk about food. And again, they reflect a time and space in which a great many people were hungry and didn't necessarily know if they would eat or what they would eat on any given day. So a practitioner with a bowl of food knows that they need to be grateful. And they know that food that is soft and clean and tasty is like a great boon, something really special. We say this meal nourishes us in our practice. So when he came back from China, Dogen codified the rules of Orioki in a chapter called Fushuku Hampo, The Dharma for Taking Food. And you can find an English translation in this book, the Eihei Shingi, translated by Teigen Leighton. Most of the chapter is very specific, very nuanced rules for Orioki and how to serve and how to receive food. But this is how he begins the chapter. And this was written in 1246, by the way. So right toward the end of his life, he was doing this. A sutra says, if you can remain the same with food, all dharmas also remain the same. If all dharmas are the same, then also with food, you will remain the same. That quote is from Vimalakirti, Nirdesa Sutra. Just let dharma be the same as food, and let food be the same as dharma. For this reason, if dharmas are the dharma nature, then food also is the dharma nature. If the Dharma is suchness, food also is suchness. If the Dharma is the single mind, food also is the single mind. He goes on for a little while, and then he quotes the Lotus Sutra. Therefore, this same, first he says this, therefore this same is not the sameness of parity or equality, but the sameness of awakening to the true sameness. Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, the sameness of awakening to the true sameness. In other words, my light's on. We need to change. If you bring me the mic, I can keep going while we change batteries or something. Oh, so it's just the headset. Okay. Sorry, y'all. Okay, so the sameness of awakening to the true sameness. I love that idea that everything awakens the same way and awakens to the same thing. And that's really Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Awakening to the true sameness is the ultimate identity from beginning to end. The suchness of the ultimate identity from beginning to end is the genuine form of all dharmas, which only a Buddha together with a Buddha can exhaustively penetrate. You in the Dogen study group should be recognizing some of these phrases. He comes back to that a lot. For this reason, dharma is itself food. Food is itself dharma. This dharma is what is received and used by all Buddhas in the past and future. This food is the fulfillment that is the joy of dharma and the delight of meditation. So in typical Dogen fashion, he's taking food and Dharma and just throwing them back and forth and mixing them up and really forcing you to see them as the same thing. It's the idea of true sameness that comes from the Lotus Sutra, by the way. Now, one more quote. I want to go back to another old Dharma talk by Kyogen. It is said that in the beginning, we practice for the sake of ourselves. Later, for the sake of self and others. In the end, we practice for the sake of the Dharma, the truth itself. A Zen master, when asked what he understood, said, "When the bell rings, I put on my robe." The form of practice was simply his life. He was just doing it all naturally without any thought of trying to get anywhere at all. What deep freedom. So in that little section, Kyogen is pointing out the way form and formless work with each other, how they function together. With meals, with formal meals, the form has a lot of aspects, but it's primarily this discipline. Sitting quietly, fully focused, bowls open, the servers bring the food, you hold the bowl just so. There's very specific ways to do each movement. You attend to the bows, you move quietly. And those forms are pointing us to the possibility of maintaining this spacious, liberated state of mind. Now and then, in those moments of discipline, you may experience the spacious, this state of mind that is so much bigger than suddenly than it was before. And it's the form that's pointing you there. It's pointing you to a state when you're not driven by anxiety and self-consciousness and self-defense, but you're just attending with total focus to what's in front of you. I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. The verse says, its rewards are boundless. This little bowl of oatmeal, it's boundless. In his instructions, Dogen adds, just fully appreciate and contemplate the Dharma of the principle of the way, not to waste a single grain. One thing that happens in Orioki is you eat from and then wash and put away the bowls. You eat everything in the bowl. So you take exactly as much as you want. And you might get seconds. Some places you'll never see seconds. So you have to just take what you're going to eat. And then once you've taken it, you eat it. And I've had a few experiences in Japan when I didn't really know what I was taking. And I was really sorry. But I ate it all with a lot of effort. But I did. Not to waste a single grain. This is exactly the manifesting of the sameness of Dharma and food. That's one side of it. Teigen Layton, the translator, says this is a very odd sentence in Japanese, and it can also be written this way. To fully appreciate and contemplate the Dharma of not wasting a single grain is the principle of the way. Not wasting a single grain of the principle of the way. So don't waste the Dharma either. In other words, to eat a grain of rice or oatmeal is to engage directly with the principle of the way, which can mean the Dharma, the fundamental truth, the whole thing right there, one grain. When I hear this, its rewards are boundless. You know, we really don't like to believe in boundlessness. We want to be able to control our everything, and boundlessness even of liberation seems pretty scary at times. But I'm reminded how incredibly lucky I am, how boundless my privileges are, how much good luck I have to be able to sit in this hall and eat a bowl of warm oatmeal that's served to me. It feels incredibly lucky. And it makes me want to be very careful. Not waste a single grain of the oatmeal is to not waste a single grain of the truth. That great serving that is happening here. There's a koan in which Yunmen is asked, what is every atom samadhi? And his answer is rice in the bowl, water in the bucket. And that formula, we hear versions of that formula quite a lot. Dogen particularly likes the way Yunmen put it. And he cites that quote several times. And in one case, he says, Yunmen's every atom samadhi turns into and fills the bowl. Food is dharma, and dharma is food. You just can't avoid this equation. And we understand that metaphor in a pretty immediate way, right? When you take a bite of food, sometimes you feel the life. And the five thoughts are reminding us to reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. To reflect on the labor and the effort that went into that food coming to us, which is immense and, you know, complex and profound. We can understand in a flash how much life there is in a single bite of food. And we can understand all at once our interrelationship, space and time, with the whole world, with all beings. We see the unequalness of distribution, but we also see the universality of interrelationship. And we are here because we are so hungry to hear the truth. So we come to our practice feeling at times just thirsty, just with gnawing hunger for something that will help us find a way out of our suffering, something that will give us stability, something that will take us out of our loneliness and our need. It longs to be fed. It yearns for food. And we are fed. We are given nourishment here. In one of the many cases where Dogen does cite this comment from Yunmen, he says this, and this is from the Eihei Koriko. I didn't bring the whole volume. I just brought the page. He says, the Buddhas of all times right now share the same hands and eyes with you and practice and affirm this for the whole 360 days. The ancestors from all generations right now share one body and mind with you and hold it carefully for 12 months. The sun is round and the moon is full, and merit returns to accomplish the way. If suddenly the wooden ladle strikes the rice container or the serving pot, with the same voice, different mouths chant, Maha Prajna Paramita. Usually we chant without realizing that our single loud voice is chanting Maha Prajna Paramita. Surprisingly, whether we are hitting up against this or that, or striking fences or walls, wherever we go, we cannot avoid arousing the Dharma body. How can we discuss this place we cannot avoid? I love this image. The wooden ladle strikes the serving pot, and the world is chanting Maha Prajna Paramita, the great perfection of wisdom. The last line is, this is filling us with ease and joy. This is not how we usually think of enjoyment. The 10 benefits give us enjoyment, right? Temporary, limited, individual pleasure. But there's more, because Buddhist joy is different. It arises, it's traditionally said that Buddhist joy arises out of releasing the defilements, letting go of the selfish and fearful behavior that cuts us off from other beings, allowing us to really enter into that interrelationship and that shared nourishment. And of course, none of us are free from the defilements. Not all the time. But each of us is capable of moments of liberation, moments of realizing life free from defilement, minds free from defilement, meaning free from grasping, free from aversion, free from wishing, hoping, and fearing, fully present. Often when we say happiness, when we say we are happy or we want to be happy, we're really talking about relative and immediate circumstances. We're talking about small, immediate conditions. And our happiness is based on these immediate surroundings. Relationships, achievements, recognition, safety, things that change. Buddhist happiness is not dependent on changing phenomena. It's found anywhere and everywhere. So what is that? It's not the oatmeal. I mean, oatmeal brings us relief from hunger. Oatmeal keeps our bowels regular. Oatmeal brings a pleasant taste. But the oatmeal appearing in our bowl just when we need it, that's Dharma. That's abundance, plenty, intimacy, shared life. At the same moment, the same bite, it's both. We are here to live in vivid reality. We want to live in a vivid world. Though we don't really know we want that for a long time. And we may think we really don't particularly want that. We're just seeking a way to be done with our suffering. We just want to let go of some of our fears and our wishes and our losses. We seek a kind of security, and we call that happiness. But it only works to the extent that we can grab it and hang on to it and keep hold of it. This is not a way of joy and ease. So going back to the Buddha's early teaching, everything needs nutriment. Everything eats. One of the fundamental truths, the gateway of suffering, the gateway of liberation. We get there in part by being willing to see how that need for nourishment drives us, what it makes us do. How does desire function in your life? How has desire driven human history? But in particular, how does it function in your life? What does desire lead you to do or lead you away from, help you avoid, or make you grab? And we have to be willing to face that deep hunger for truth, which can be really frightening to face. To realize, when I realized how much I lacked in my life, how much I longed for in my supposedly decent life, it was a pretty big gap. It was a pretty big gulf. But I wanted that vivid reality. So what is Buddhist happiness? It's the state of deep, deep acceptance. Deeper acceptance than we think. Fully present, fully alive. Not a fantasy. Not a dream. Not intoxication. Not lost in the past. Not forecasting the future. It's not a wish. It's not a fear. It's not a hope. It's just this. This is complete. And I've had a few of those shining moments of being able to look up. It's always experienced as a looking up into the face of reality in this moment. And it comes out of this well of great joy and utter relaxation. Complete ease. Just this. Just this. There's humor there. There's laughter. And there's awareness of death, and there's awareness of pain, and there's sorrow, and there's love, and there's change. There's plenty of change. That deep acceptance lives in the river of change. One more fascicle from Dogen, Gyobutsu Yuigi, which is translated in a lot of different ways. The deportment of the practicing Buddha, or the dignified behavior of Buddha. It's a very odd chapter. It stands out in Dogen's work a little bit. as being about dignity and decorum, etiquette, actually, how we treat each other. But of course, there's deeper meaning in there. And he says, we should realize that when we emerge at birth, we emerge in accord with the way. When we enter into death, we enter in accord with the way. So what is that in accord with? To me, that's that total relaxation. That's the ease. It means no resistance to circumstances, to be in accord with what is happening. In that long chapter, he says, there is the calm breaking into a smile. There is the blinking of the eyes. These reference particular awakening experiences. These are moments in the deportment of the practicing Buddha. It is not pulled by things. It does not pull things. There it is. It is not pulled by things. It does not pull things. It simply accepts and lives in this vivid reality right here. Oatmeal, fruit, tea. And Buddhist maturity really shows in your ability to relax, to be at ease, whatever's happening. Remember back to what the quote from Kyogen, we are just doing it all naturally without any thought of trying to get anywhere at all. What deep freedom. So the form points us at this spacious, liberated mind, but the spacious, liberated mind is pointing at us all the time. It's doing the form. It's changing us. Every time we get just a little bit bigger and a little bit freer. And if you do it long enough, you find yourself starting to do all kinds of ordinary activities just a little bit differently. You wash the dishes a little differently. You wait for a bus a little bit differently. You change a diaper a little bit differently. Sometimes I catch myself being in a hurry, usually because I've banged into something. That's the usual universe's reminder that I'm in a hurry, that my mind is not here. It's there. It's over there. My mind is in the past or the future or a fantasy. Stop. The message is always just stop. Come back to your breath. Dharma is simply the way we live our lives. And finally, I will just say, we offer the meal to the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and the four benefactors. And that's another talk all on its own.
Hello. For everyone in the Zendo, if you want to raise your hands when you would like to speak, and I will come to you, put the microphone up to your mouth so everyone can hear you, and say your name. For those in the Zoom Zendo, Kate will, you can either raise your hand or type your note into the chat, and Kate will either unmute you or read your question.
This is Patrick. I know that the five thoughts weren't really at the point of the talk or the focus of the talk, but I was wondering if you have any thoughts about saying the five thoughts before snacking, because I snack a ton. And on the one hand, it seems really annoying to say the five thoughts every time. But on the other hand, maybe with that annoyance comes an awareness, and otherwise it's pretty mindless activity.
Mm-hmm. Do it sometimes. Make a show sometimes. Just snack sometimes. Just feel how it feels. You know, believe me, the people at the table with you might be annoyed if you do it. So we have to just... Each moment is going to be so unique. You just have to be able to really show up in that moment and ask what is needed here. There's a way I've learned over a lot of years to make that show in my head, to make a full bow in my head if needed, without interrupting or disturbing anybody around me. I don't always do it when I'm snacking. Sometimes it's like, there's cake. Yeah. I just want cake. And yet I feel gratitude in the cake.
Oh, I said, well, sometimes it's only like one almond. So to say the five thoughts for one almond.
Yeah, great. Like, come on. <You're> five. No, my main serious answer is to meet that moment with awareness, whatever it's requiring.
Hi, this is Genko. I was thinking about, oh, I think it was Friday night. I was leaving the prison, and there's this huge stand of evergreens, and the sun was just setting, and it was like lit up with this gold color. And I just stood and looked at those trees for a little while, thinking, how lucky did we get to live on a planet and in a place and have this moment of stunning beauty? And to me, that's a kind of a nourishment of its own.
Oh, yeah.
I could almost say the five thoughts for that. And I had a thought at some point during your talk about how life itself has that sense of yearning, has that sense of, some of it is the drive for food, but some of it is simply, maybe it's not simple, but it is, it's like a drive to live completely. Mm-hmm. And whatever that looks like. And I know that, I think that's really what brought me to Buddhism, is that I sensed there was something here that I really needed. And I didn't have a sense of what I lacked. I just knew there was something that I really needed.
Yeah.
So that yearning can take a lot of different forms, I think.
And I think most of the living organisms on the planet, and many of things that we wouldn't call living, but are living in their way, live in that vivid reality.
Right.
They aren't in their own way, but it is both the blessing and the curse of human minds and higher minds that we create these whole false realities around it, and all these stories and scripts that prevent us. They just form walls between us and reality. So food is dharma, dharma is food. You could also say washing dishes and changing diapers is dharma, and dharma is washing dishes and changing diapers. It's just live. Yeah. I saw a hand back there. So.
Hello, this is Brandon. So this is a question having an unhealthy relationship with food, and that can manifest in many different ways with different people. For me, I just anxiety eat. So had a bad day, had some issue with a different person, chip bag, chocolate, whatever. And at that point, the food doesn't become nourishment, it becomes almost like an intoxicant. Any thoughts on how to curb that? And also, why isn't caffeine considered an intoxicant?
Good questions. And it's not almost an intoxicant, it is an intoxicant. It's used to buffer emotion and anxiety. That's what an intoxicant does. It alters your experience. For you, it's kind of the opposite of what Patrick asked. I'd say, do the whole verse before you take a bite. Do the whole thing before you open that chip bag, and it will probably shift your relationship to the chips a little bit. And it will take time. It's a learned behavior, just like the intoxicating behavior is a learned behavior. So much of what we do is just learned habitual behaviors. And we're just trying to come to awareness about it. We're just trying to be aware of that. So if you can exhibit just enough discipline to stop and say the verse, it will help. It will help a lot. But a lot of animals, not just humans, do this. It's part of being a biological creature. We're driven to feed ourselves. Like the Buddha said, it's one of the fundamental equations of being alive. So don't beat yourself up at the same time. You start looking at the anxiety and what's underneath that, but just the moment of eating, just try to put a little formality around it. Caffeine, I used to be a Mormon. We weren't allowed to have caffeine. I love caffeine. I don't know. But I think it's another one of those drugs that has been around as long as human beings knew what it was. So,
Caitlin has a question on Zoom. Okay, now it's unmuted. Hi, this is Kaylin. Gosh, I really appreciate the questions. And at first I was like, Patrick asked my question. Like it was, so that was really fun. But then I noticed I had a second one when I was hearing you talk about doing the like meal versus or like bringing this aspect of like receiving the food and mindfulness while eating with others. I have been trying to do the meal verse before every time I'm eating, including snacking. And I do notice that I have adapted in even like a tiny abbreviated one, which I'll pay attention to how it feels when I do that one versus the full thing. But yeah, I've been noticing all these different situations when I'm eating with people in terms of sometimes I do like invite, you know, others to do the meal verse with me or to listen to it. Sometimes I do an abbreviated or like a more secularized one with them. Sometimes I do it silently. Sometimes I skip it. Sometimes I do the super short one, and it's different a lot. And I was wondering if I'd love to hear more about your process of like how you've navigated that when eating, especially with other people who don't practice Zen Buddhism.
I do it in my head most of the time. And, you know, sometimes if I'm with other people and if I'm in a joyful, intimate relationship with a few other people, I just give myself to the enjoyment, which I think is also a way of saying thank you. I don't think it helps us to get stiff with it, if that makes sense. Don't forget the ease and the joy. You don't want to be rigid about it. You let it work for you. But we can also get very stiff and ascetic about it, and we can get judgmental about it. So there's a lot of traps, always a lot of traps in form. So let it be a mirror. Just let it reflect wherever your state is.
Thank you.
We got time for one or two more questions.
His mess. I kind of have like a complicated health reality where I have to eat a lot because of like low blood sugar, and the world starts to feel like it's ending if I don't really tend to it. And I'm kind of in this point where I'm like, it's so annoying to have to be like taking care of this body all the time. What's any thoughts on relating to that?
Well, being two generations older than you, I'm not going to tell you it gets easier. You've got a body to take care of, and it gets really annoying sometimes. But what's your alternative?
Yeah. Feeling like the world is ending.
Find the gratitude in there. Really find the joy of having a body, because that's there too.
Okay.
Okay, Roka, and that'll be our last one, I think.
Michiko, I've been studying Sandokai in liturgy, and I shared with a class earlier this week a sense of like celebrating acceptance of things the way they are, including like gritty things in my life, pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And your talk, it makes me realize how nourishing all of it is. If I can not only accept the gritty things in my life, how interesting it would be if I looked at them as maybe nourishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Sandokai is full of this lovely, simple vision of front and back foot in walking. We move back and forth. And Buddhist joy is not just happy stuff. Buddhist joy is the depth of understanding what it is to be alive and to be really fully present in our life. And it, of course, has to do this. You know, and it changes such a, change is hard. Nagarjuna points out, change is what allows all things to be. We would, without change, there would be nothing. It would be dead. So lean into it.
I have a sense of celebration. Could you say anything about that?
Yeah. That's it. That's all there is to say. Celebrate life. Yeah.